Some cases close with a confession, some close with a conviction, and some never really close at all. The Grimes Tapes is a detective fiction series following Detective Sarah Grimes as she works the cases that don't fit neatly into a file. Cases where power, politics, and human nature collide. And the truth is, the last thing anyone wants found. The Grimes Tapes, across the aisle. She wasn't on the guest list. She came in through a service entrance in a dark coat with tears on her face. She wanted one thing, for the senator to hear her son's name. 3 months earlier, a 23-year-old college student walked into a convenience store to buy milk and never walked out. The gun that killed him was manufactured by the senator's wife's family. Now Grimes has a new face on the board, a grieving mother with a motive shaped like a bullet. But grief and guilt don't always point where you think they do. And the deeper Grimes digs, the more she realizes this case isn't about who was angry enough to kill. It's about who was afraid. Week 3. They missed Frost at the gas station by 40 minutes. The cashier remembered him, looked like he hadn't slept in a week, and the security footage confirmed it. Frost had paid cash for everything except the gas, and that single credit card slip was the only trace he'd left in 2 weeks.
"He's running his own investigation," Grimes said, studying the footage in the car on the way back.
"Look at him. He's got a bag full of files, a laptop, 3 phones. This isn't a man on the run. This is a man on a mission."
"Or a man building a cover story," Callahan countered.
"Maybe, but my gut says he's more useful to us talking than in handcuffs. We need to figure out what he knows." Back at the precinct, a different lead demanded attention. The mystery woman from the fundraiser. Chen's description, 50s, dark coat, emotional, not on the guest list, had been circulated to hotel staff, and a valet remembered her.
"She came in a cab," the valet told them. "Didn't have an invitation. Front desk turned her away, but she got in through the service entrance somehow. I saw her again about 20 minutes later, near the bar, before security escorted her out." "Did she say anything?"
"She was asking for the senator, said she needed to speak with him, said it was about her son." Grimes felt the hairs on the back of her neck stand up. Her son. Callahan was already on his phone, cross-referencing. "There was a shooting 3 months ago. Convenience store robbery gone wrong. Victim was Michael Reeves, 23, killed with a handgun. His mother is Lisa Reeves."
"What kind of handgun?"
Callahan paused. "A Cartwright Arms 9mm. The room went very quiet. "A woman whose son was killed by a gun made by the senator's wife's family company," Grimes said slowly. "A woman who showed up uninvited to the senator's fundraiser, upset, demanding to see him. And the senator ends up dead that night."
"She'd have motive," Callahan said. "Revenge, grief. She blames the gun industry, and Thornton is the politician who protects the gun industry." "Do we know if she was still in the building when the murder happened?"
"Security escorted her out at approximately 9:10, but the service entrance she used to get in, that's the same corridor that leads to the alley." Grimes stood. "Find Lisa Reeves, bring her in, and pull her background. Priors, financials, mental health history, everything."
"At least we know what she looks like," Callahan said, turning his laptop around.
Lisa Reeves's Facebook profile filled the screen, a warm smile, her arm around her son at what looked like a backyard barbecue, a chef's hat perched on her head. Grimes studied the photo, a mother, a cook, a woman with a dead son and a grudge against the gun industry. It was almost too clean.
Lisa Reeves lived in a small apartment on the east side, the walls covered with photos of a young man in a college sweatshirt, her son, Michael. She opened the door looking exhausted, unsurprised to see detectives. "I wondered when you'd come," she said, stepping aside to let them in. "Mrs. Reeves, we understand you were at Senator Thornton's fundraiser the night he was killed."
"I was."
She didn't deny it. "I shouldn't have gone. I know that now." "Why did you go?" She sank into a chair, wrapping her arms around herself. "My son was killed 3 months ago by a gun that never should have been on the street, a gun made by a company that spends millions making sure nothing ever changes. And Senator Thornton, he was their champion. Every vote, every speech, every dollar, he made sure those guns kept flowing."
"So you went to confront him?"
Callahan said. "I went to look him in the eye, to make him see what his votes cost real people. Michael was 23. He was in college. He was buying milk." Her voice cracked. "I wanted the senator to know my son's name." "Did you speak to him?" "No. Security grabbed me before I could get close enough. They walked me to the front entrance and put me out."
"What did you do then?"
"I sat on the steps and cried for about 10 minutes. Then I called a cab and went home." "Can anyone verify that?" "The cab company should have a record. I called around 9:15, they picked me up around 9:25. She met Grimes's eyes. "I didn't kill him, detective. I wanted to scream at him, not stab him."
"Did you go back into the building at any point after security escorted you out?"
"No. I couldn't even if I wanted to. They were watching the entrance."
"What about the service entrance you used to get in?"
Lisa hesitated. "I didn't go back in, I swear." They checked the cab records. A pickup was logged at 9:27 p.m. from the Grand Hotel's main entrance, destination matching Lisa Reeves's home address. The driver confirmed the passenger.
"Crying lady in a dark coat."
"Timeline's tight but possible," Callahan said at the precinct. "Security escorts her out at 9:10. She sits on the steps. Cab picks her up at 9:27. Murder happens between 9:45 and 10:15. If she got in the cab, she's clear." "And the cab driver confirms she did, but..." Grimes stared at the board. "She knew the service entrance. She was motivated. She was emotionally volatile. And her son was killed by a Cartwright arms weapon. You like her for this?"
"I don't like anyone for this yet, but she stays on the board."
Grimes tapped Lisa's photo. "A grieving mother with a grudge against the gun industry. It plays, but something about her story feels off. Not dishonest, exactly. Incomplete."
"What do you mean?"
"She said she went there to make Thornton see what his votes cost, but she also said she wondered when we'd come. That's not what you say if you just tried and failed to talk to a politician. That's what you say when you know something."
"You think Thornton and Lisa Reeves had more contact than she's admitting?"
"I think we need to dig deeper." The dig paid off 3 days later, and from an unexpected direction. Digital forensics had been working through Senator Thornton's deleted emails, a slow process involving encrypted accounts and password-protected files. Most of it was routine political correspondence, but buried in a folder labeled Personal Archive was an email chain that changed the shape of the investigation. The emails were between Senator Thornton and an address that traced back to a public library computer. The correspondent was anonymous, but the content was specific. Statistics on gun violence, personal stories of victims, and links to research on gun control effectiveness. The tone was not threatening, it was persuasive. Someone had been systematically trying to change Senator Thornton's mind. The most recent email, dated 2 weeks before the murder, contained a single line. "I'd like to meet. My name is Lisa Reeves. My son was Michael." "She didn't just show up at the fundraiser on a whim," Grimes said, staring at the printout. "She'd been corresponding with Thornton for months, and he was engaging. Look at his replies. He's asking questions, requesting more information. This isn't a politician brushing off a constituent. He's genuinely interested."
"But she told us she went to confront him," Callahan said. "To look him in the eye, make him see. That's not what this reads like."
"No, this reads like a relationship, an intellectual one at least.
She was educating him and he was listening. So why lie about it? Grimes leaned back. Because a woman who was secretly corresponding with a murder victim looks a hell of a lot more suspicious than a woman who showed up uninvited to yell at a politician. She picked up the phone. Get Lisa Reeves back in here. Lisa Reeves looked smaller the second time, as if the intervening days had worn away whatever resolve she'd had. She sat across from Grimes and Callahan, her hands flat on the table. You lied to us, Mrs. Reeves. I didn't lie. I left things out. You told us you went to the fundraiser to confront the senator, to make him see what his votes cost. But you'd been emailing him for months. He knew your son's name. He knew you. Lisa's chin trembled. I was afraid. I was afraid that if you knew we'd been in contact, you'd think I... We found the emails, all of them. You weren't threatening him. You were teaching him. The tears came then. He reached out first. After Michael was killed, there was news coverage. The senator's office sent a form condolence letter, the kind politicians send to look like they care. But then, a week later, I got a personal email. From him. Not his staff. Him. He said Michael's death had affected him, and he wanted to understand more. And you talked. For months. He was changing, Detective. Not fast, not publicly, but inside. He was starting to see that the world he'd built, the votes, the donors, the NRA ratings, it was costing real lives. He told me he was working on something, a new approach. He wouldn't give me details, but he said things were going to change. Did he mention a project name? Olive Branch, maybe. Lisa shook her head. No, nothing like that. He was very careful about specifics, but he asked if I'd be willing to meet in person. We'd planned to meet the week after the fundraiser. When I heard about the event, I thought, maybe I could catch him there instead. I was too impatient to wait. And when security kicked you out? I went home, and the next morning I found out he was dead. She wiped her eyes. I didn't tell you the truth because I was scared. But I also didn't tell you because what James was doing, what he was becoming, it felt sacred. Like if I talked about it, it would somehow be used against him. Against his memory. After Lisa left, Grimes sat in the interview room alone for a long time. Callahan found her there, staring at the wall.
She's not our killer, Grimes said.
You're sure? Cab alibi is solid, and the email chain. You don't spend months patiently trying to change a man's mind and then stab him the week before you're supposed to meet him. She was invested in his transformation, not his death. Okay, so where does that leave us? Grimes pulled the board close. It leaves us with something more important than a suspect. It leaves us with a motive. Someone was changing James Thornton's mind about guns. He was working on something. A new approach, Lisa called it. He was careful, secretive, but he was moving. And someone found out.
And someone found out. Someone for whom Thornton's shift wasn't just politically inconvenient. It was an existential threat.
She stared at the board. We've been looking at this from the wrong end, Mike. We've been asking who had a reason to be angry at Thornton. The affairs, dead end. The grieving mother, dead end. The donor, alibi. But what if the motive wasn't anger? What if it was fear? Fear of what? Fear of what Thornton was about to become.